Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. No sponsor today, I'm correct?
What's that?
No sponsor today that I need to mention? Okay.
Yeah.
Mazel tov again to Jay and Geeta and the entire Liska family on the occasion of Tali's engagement to CJ. Very exciting. He's preparing me. All right. So let us move ahead. I'm sorry for any shortage of sheets. We're at the bottom of Yud Bet Amud Bet, the fifth mission of the Perek. We'll finish off that mission, and then we'll start on to Yud Gimel. For those who have Yud Gimel, we are aiming on Yud Gimel Amud Bet. There's the yellow from Saluta to Ta'anita. My hope is to get up to there, and if we have time, we'll do a little bit more, but trying to scale down my realism and ambition, and that's where we'll hope to get. And thematically, it works to stop there, because that yellow is going to go on into about half the next Amud, and it's not that easy to stop in the middle. We'd have to recap it anyway. So we'll see how we get there. So let's very briefly summarize where we're up to. The first three Mishnayot of the chapter. And by the way, there's one more Daf after this, of this Perek, at which point we'll be able to kind of close the book. Well, not really. Close the chapter on this chapter, and then move into a new thematic discussion. But what we'll see is that the contours from the beginning of the Masechta that says, when do we say Mashiv HaRuach, leads us to a very reflective place through the discussions that we've had, which are contained in a chapter. And it couldn't be more clear. When people think of the Talmud as kind of like a mess, redacted, badly edited series of discussions, it couldn't be more clear that as we get from beginning to the end of one chapter, that this is a purpose-built flow of discussion that deals with some very concrete themes that are reflected through the discussions. So the first three Mishnayot were about regulating our relationship with God in regular times. When do we pray? How do we pray? What do we pray? When do we stop praying? When is it appropriate to save some things that are tied to the seasons? It was kind of a, how do we regulate normal religious life? The fourth Mishnah, which we were dealing with last time, which we'll now leave off this time, was dealing with, well, when that regular relationship seems to be on the rocks with God, what do we do? Prayers aren't working. I've said in the right time the right thing, and nothing's happening. It's not raining. My economy is now on the brink. My life is going to go into a tailspin. How do I react? And we had this kind of, don't go to, you know, whatever it's called, don't go crazy initially. Do this in phases. Go the middle ground, which is partial fast, you can eat at night, but don't fast in the morning. And then it led to a discussion of whether that works generally. If I want to do something in terms of build a relationship with God or react to a tragedy in my own life, does it make sense for me to fast for half a day? It seems kind of like a half-baked measure. And the discussion suggested that, yeah, there is a way to have a partial fast. What happens if it turns out it's 4 in the afternoon, you had a crazy day, you didn't eat all day? Then you think, well, I didn't eat all day. Maybe I should treat this as the fast day. Is that kind of cheap? And the Imam says, no, you can do that. As long as you haven't eaten since you woke up, you can then harness the entire day as part of a spiritual project and dedicate only in the last 2 hours, saying this is the fast day. So there are ways to harness half measures to be part of a relationship with God. Today, as we come into this Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Bet, this is when we're in real emergency territory. This is when you are scared that the relationship is done. God is not responding. You have fasted. You have dedicated a day of reflection to God, and as they say, nada, nothing's happened. So I don't know how to deal with this now. And now the Mishnah is going to list a whole bunch of measures that are taken that will ultimately lead to kind of the most extreme version of, I think God's not here anymore, and I don't know how to deal with that. And if we're looking for Western references, at least in my head, the things that come to mind, there's, if you wonder why I've seen so many movies, by the way, it's not that like I go home every night and I just put on Netflix. My mother, who worked incredibly, incredibly hard as a doctor with very late hours, every Wednesday night, she would rent a movie. And my father said to me last week, he said, when do you have time to watch all these movies? I said, well, actually, Mum used to watch them every week. I don't know what you were doing. But every Wednesday night, she'd rent a movie. And, you know, if I was living at home for 18 years and you got 50 weeks, that's a lot of movies, and I wouldn't watch them all, but I'd sit in. So some of the more well-known ones, but there was one she watched 1 week, which I had to look up the title, because it's not a well-known one, called The Greatest. I don't know if any of you have seen this. I'm sure you've heard of Pierce Brosnan. He was James Bond for a while. Irish actor, puts an English accent on a lot so that he can fit into these roles. But Pierce Brosnan's in this movie, and it's called The Greatest. And it was one of the more harrowing movies that I saw, not because it's a horror movie, but it deals with a family undergoing unexpected grief. They lose a son in a car accident, and they're coming to terms with it. And they don't have the structures of veloute that we have, and it's about, how do I process this? When am I permitted to enjoy myself? And there's a very difficult moment when the father, Pierce Brosnan, is trying to, like, get his wife out of this grief and say, let's have fun. And she tries to, and she feels so guilty enjoying herself when she's conflicted. And it's a very difficult movie. They try never to clean up his room because they're trying to preserve it. And one day he decides, I just got to do it because it's going to help her. And he, like, cleans the room. And she's been 6 years, and we haven't touched anything she goes into. And it's kind of, how do I deal with, when can I enjoy life again? When is that not a betrayal of my loss of my loved one to start enjoying life? And to some degree, that's what's going to be toyed with in this Duff. What are we doing here? If the relationship with God is done, and not that God's no longer a factor, but he's not talking to me, do I have to just live on my own? Am I allowed to enjoy myself? How do I cope with life? And there's a book written by Sheryl Sandberg. Anyone familiar with Sheryl Sandberg?
Facebook.
Yes, Facebook, indeed. Her name gets around when they have congressional hearings about Facebook. She's second in command of Facebook, I think.
Was it Option B?
Yes, Option B is the book I was thinking of when I had time to listen to podcasts. I can't remember if it was On Being or some religious podcast. I mean, about religion, not that you have to listen to religiously. And they interviewed her. Her husband died suddenly. He was on a treadmill, and he just had a heart attack and died. Which is why I never exercise. But aside from that, and she wrote a book, Option B. The subtitle is Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy. And those are three different things that one does in grief. I need to be resilient against this and finding joy. Now, that is in grief. When something is lost, you have to come to terms with whatever the condition is now, something I had is gone. But we're now dealing with the Havdil in the relationship with God. It's not gone. So I shouldn't really be mourning. And you can't imagine, no rain has fallen. The economy is about to go. God isn't responding. Finding joy shouldn't really be a priority. Resilience may be, facing adversity, but I shouldn't be finding joy. Meaning if I, again, the Havdil to use this example, I don't want you to think that every week I go home and have a fight with Miriam. But if I were having a debate with Miriam, if everything had fallen apart and we were living separately, God forbid, and then we'd have to find a way to find joy. It's over, and it would make no more sense for me to go knocking on the door and try. It's done. But if I've had a debate and then I say, okay, well, I need to find a way to find joy. I'm gonna sip some wine and I'm gonna put my feet up. And then she came back into the room. This is what you do. We're in this state. You know, it's not over. We're trying to get this back together. So that's where we are now. We are in an emergency state. God hasn't walked away, but things are on the edge, and we're trying to figure out, how do I react? Should I be drinking wine? As a Jew in a place where God isn't responding, is God going to look down thinking, why are you drinking wine? In Aveluda, you meant to drink wine, and that's going to be between grief and tragedy and desperation is where we are right now, and we're trying to deal with essentially three subjects in the next stuff. One is malacha, working. Is it appropriate to work if you're in a state of religious desperation? Number two, bathing. And this is going to be an odd question to ask. Why do we bathe? That may be a question we ask ourselves all the time. Or kids ask a lot of them. Why do we bathe?
Hygiene.
Okay. If it was just about hygiene, how often would we bathe? I mean, everyone's different, of course, but probably less frequently than we do, right? Why else might we bathe? Not just to keep ourselves healthy. Some people don't enjoy bathing. Some people, like, nothing more exciting than going home and having a nice warm shower. I tell you, every night when we bathe every day. I know there was a little bit of controversy about 3 months ago when there's a celebrity couple, I can't remember, Ashton Kutcher and his wife, Mila Kunis, who is a Jewish Russian immigrant. And there was a big controversy because she said, we don't bathe our kids every night. And everyone said, oh my gosh, they're horrific parents. How could they not do this? So they made a couple of videos to defend themselves, showing them bathing the children and appropriately say, see, we do bathe the children. We're just saying, not either way. But every night we bathe our children. And in the winter when it's cold and I go home and I like put my hand in the bath, it's so nice and warm. And I'm like, oh, I just want to get in the tub. It's sometimes just a pleasure to be surrounded by warm water. It is almost a kind of womb-like return to comfort. So can we distinguish between hygienic bathing and pleasurable bathing? Now, what is the most fundamental way to distinguish between those two types of bathing? What do I not do if I want to enjoy myself with a nice warm shower?
Soap.
Well, soap's one thing, and
cold.
Yeah, if it's cold. I'm not going into a cold shower for joy, but if I'm told that I need to be hygienic, it may make sense.
Then you're suffering.
Then you're suffering in order for some external thing. So what we'll see is during Ave Lut and during this stage of Ta'anit Tzibur, there are going to be different requirements about what kind of bathing you can do, and that's going to be the rest of the duff. And then there are concerns about prayer. What do you say on a Ta'anit in particular? What is a prayer for a fast day in particular? Anenu, we insert into the Amidah, and there'll be a discussion, when do you insert it, who inserts, is it just, and this comes up, of course, on fast days with us, because the Shlit Tzibur says it in a different place to the congregation. We insert it into Shema Koleinu. They have their own separate bracha. Why is it not the same? That'll be part of the discussion. We'll get to probably not today. So let us, Yud Bet Amud Bet at the bottom, Mishnah. Avru Eilu V'lo Nanu. If these middle-of-the-road fast days have gone, you've had now, what we said, 3 days, three fast days of the Yechidim, three fast days of the Tzibur, when we only don't eat during the day, but you can eat at night, you can go to work, and you can wash and wear shoes, and it's just kind of, I'm not eating for the day during daylight hours. If those pass and we haven't had a reaction from God, it hasn't rained. Beit Din goes in Shalosh Ta'aniot Acheret Al HaTzibur. There are three more fasts that are decreed on the public. Ochlin Veshotin Miba Odyom. You can eat and drink during the previous day, meaning until dusk, until nighttime, until the sun goes down of that day. Va'asurin b'mlacha, you're forbidden to work. V'chitza b'sicha nilat asandal, you can't wash yourself, you can't anoint yourself. If you can think of a better word for that, that would be good, because nobody anoints themselves. But it's like putting on deodorant or oils or cologne, lathering this, I don't know what the best term would be. V'nilat asandal, wearing shoes, tashmish amita, marital intimacy, v'nolin et amachetzot, and we lock up the bathhouses. So that is the first emergency stage where we go full degree emergency. You can't eat at night, you can't drink at night, you're not wearing shoes, you can't bathe, no marital intimacy, everything's off the table, and you can't work. Are you allowed to work on Tisha B'Av? Well, this is where it comes common. What does malacha mean? Now, sometimes, we just at Hanukkah, there is a minhag that is noted by many, that women in particular don't do malacha for half an hour after the candles are lit. What does malacha mean? Traditionally in Jewish thought, if I say malacha, what does malacha mean? Right, it means I can't winnow, and I can't shecht, and I can't hunt, and I can't write. But what if I want to do, you know, my work is preparing for exams, so can I review my material? I'm not doing any malacha. So it turns out that there are times when malacha literally just means work. It doesn't mean lametet malachot. So it's quite possible during that, like, there's some question that was asked to one of the Rosh Yeshiva, can my wife make latkes while the candles are burning on Hanukkah because there are malachot involved in that? And the response was somewhat incredulous. Said, well, on Yom Tov you can cook, even though it's nisim malacha. Hanukkah can't be more machmeh than Yom Tov, but it's also just a different kind of malacha. So we'll address that in the Gemara that follows. Now, third line of the Mishnah, Avru Eilu V'lo Nanu, if those fast days pass and we're not answered, meaning we've gone full-blown emergency situation, we're not eating all day, we're not wearing shoes, this is like Tisha B'Av now, and there's no reaction after three fasts, this is bad. This is, again, like the equivalent of me sending 26, or whatever the number people do, 26 rose stems to Miriam 3 weeks in a row, and I get nothing back, no response. What do I do at this point? Beit Din Gozen Alem Od Sheva, we now have seven fast days imposed, Shehin Yud Gimel Taniyot Al Abitzibur, which amounts to 13 fasts. We had the three original, bless you, then three more emergency, we're not doing anything, it's Tisha B'Av now, and now we've got seven more, that leads to 13. Everything is really in trouble now. So what more can we do? If we've now had full-blown fast and we're not working and we've locked the bathhouses, what happens now? Hari Elu Yuterot Al Harishona, and these seven are even more extreme than the first. Sheke Elu Matriyin V'Nolin Et Achanuyot, because there are two extra things we do. We lock up the stores. We shut down the market. There's no economy functioning at all at this point. We're saying if God doesn't give us food, we may as well shut down the market. And Matriyin, what is Matriyin? Yeah, it sounds like Truah, so the Gemara will talk about it. Does this mean we blow shofar, or does it mean we cry out? Does it mean we actually physically go into the streets and we cry out to God in a serious way? And details, B'sheni Martin HaMashecha, and of course, you shut down the markets, people still need to eat. So what can we do? So one is, on Mondays you can open the stores around dusk. V'chamishi matarim ne kavod ha-shabbat, and on the seventh, the fifth day, on Thursday, you're permitted to open the stores so that people have food for Shabbat. And again, this is, how do I navigate a time? Well, I have to live my life. I have to keep breathing. But we're in a challenging state. What is seen as betraying the tragic state we're in? Like if I go to the store and I buy myself some candies, and somebody sees me going and they know I just lost a parent a day ago, and they're thinking, you're going to the candy store, you know, aren't you? I actually think there's an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm when they start debating, when is it appropriate to start being not be a widow anymore and act that way. And of course he treats the matter very sensitively, as Larry David often does. Avru Eiv Lo Nanu, and if these emergency fasts go now, where you've shut the stores, you have gone into the streets and cried out to God, what do you do at this point? M'matan b'masa v'matan, you start reducing the amount of work. And this is where we start falling into grief more than desperation, where we feel like we have done everything. There is no more that we can do. We're just going to have to write this year off. The relationship with God in this cycle has got to a point where we just have to grind to a halt. We reduce the amount of business we do, bavinyan and metia, we don't do as much planting or building, but erusin, and assume we try to lessen the amount of engagements and marriages, of shelat shalom ben lachavera, and we don't really talk to each other very much. And we essentially go into a form of isolation. Kibnei Adam hanuzufin lemakon, like people who have been rejected by God. So the rest of the year, if we think, you know, it's hard to maintain on Tisha B'Av not saying hello to each other, this is suggesting that you get to a point about 3 months after the rain season has started, nothing's happened. We all just go into a state of national grief, essentially, where we're not really doing wedding. And again, I wouldn't say that COVID is convenient as a parable, but when it first hit, how do we react to this? What do we do? And there were less marriages. And to some degree, that was because you couldn't get halls. But it was also like some people were not comfortable thinking, I can't really celebrate, and I don't want my kids to have a wedding where there are 10 people here, and it's very difficult for people. But you need to keep living. So how do you manage this and navigate this? This is partially where we're going to end up. We're not going to do on this stuff, but we'll pick up this Mishnah on the next stuff. But there is a few who don't give up hope. Hayichidim chozrin umitanin ad sheitzei nisam. But there are a few of the, what we'll call elite, without wanting to be pejorative to others, the elite cadre of scholars, who are seen as essentially the close advocates who have a relationship with God. They keep fasting. So this is equivalent if, you know, you're in a company and the boss has been ignoring everybody or not talking to anybody. There are still probably people who are close friends with them. And even though the average employee or worker is not going to go knocking on the door and asking, you know, can we do something? You know, they'll get fired. They don't want to push the wrong button. There may be a couple of people who are the same work level, but have a relationship. You say, you know, can you go and keep asking? So the Yechidim keep fasting. We're not done, even though nationally we're out of options. Yatsa Nisan, but if Nisan goes, Pesach has come and gone and Nisan is over, Yardu Geshamin Simen Klala, rain at that point is bad. Rain at that point, we don't want it rain. If it starts raining then, that compounds the grief. Because now you're just going to soil the fields, nothing's going to grow, it's going to make life difficult, and we're just going to write off the year at this point. And then how do you cope with the fact that we've just had a year with no response, no options, you're just going to keep moving, Shavuos is coming, and you've got to get in the mental state of how we are nationally at this point. Shnei Mahalok, Tzichitim Ayom, and then it brings the pasuk that we actually noted on Daf Dalet, where the people ask for a king, and Shmuel says, that's a bad idea. It's like rain coming in summer, essentially, which seems good. It seems good to have authority, but it can also be traumatic. So that's the end of the final Mishnah of this fifth perek. And if we were just doing Mishnayos, we'd have to kind of end here and feel like we kind of reached the end of the theology where, when do I start Mashiach HaRuach Min HaGeshem? It's quite an optimistic moment, thinking, oh, you know, it'll rain when it rains. When do I mention that God brings rain? And now we're at a point where, if no rain comes, what do I do? Where's my relationship with God? So the Gemara picks up and starts addressing these first emergency fasts where we said, okay, we're no longer in partial mode. No eating, no drinking from the night. There's no washing. There's no shoes. There's no intimacy. There's no anointing. None of this happens. Now, Bishlama Kulu is Beitanuk. The Gemara begins first at the last medium line. It says, this is all very well, the things that are for pleasure, that you should enjoy them. Fine, don't do rechitza, sicha, tashmish, shabita, all the things that seem like they're indulgent. Don't do that. I get that. Ava malacha, but telling people they shouldn't go to work, tsarhu, is that pain? Now, this is a challenge, because often we tie work to making a living, and if you told people you can't go to work, like we see now when the economy shut down, people can get pretty upset, say, I need to make a living. But in a vacuum, if we weren't in a state when shutdowns meant people can go to work, if you said, you have to take the day off, you know, a kid at school said, you have to take the day off today, oh no, I'm so sad, I don't have to go to work. That's not pain. Telling people they've got to take the day off seems like a way to have pleasure. How can you say, oh, it's really an emergency time, don't go to work. Have the day off. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Yirmi Bar Abba. So they respond, they say, how do I know you shouldn't go to work? It's true, they suggest, it's not a logical thing, that yes, it's a form of pain. But Amar Kra, there's a verse that says, Kadshu so, you should sanctify the fast, Kiruat Sarah, you should call a gathering, Itzvah Zekanin, the elders should come together. This is a verse from Yoel, where we have that drought that hits and the plague of locusts. And they say, you should call a gathering. And what does gathering mean? Ka'atzeret. It should be just like atzeret. What is atzeret? Atzeret is Shavuot in the rabbinic lexicon. Ma'atzeret asabasit melacha. And just as on Shavuot, there's a prohibition on work. Aftanit asabasit melacha. There's a prohibition on work. Now, if we had endless time, we would spend a lot of time reflecting, why do we not work on Yom Tov? How does that connect to the fast day? Why do we connect that to Atzeret? But kind of bottom line is, when you have gatherings, you need people to be available. You know, if you're going to have a mass rally, you don't schedule it in the middle of the workday or in the middle of the summer. But, you know, we'll talk to people who do rallies in the middle of the summer when no one's available. But you try to find the people who are around so you can have a gathering. Aftanit asabasi malacha. And then the Gemara said, hold on a minute. If you're comparing this to Shavuot, when you're not allowed to do malacha on Shavuot, from what time? From sundown. So presumably you shouldn't be able to do any work on this fast day from the night before, which isn't addressed in the Mishnah, but it's now testing, is that really true? You're telling me I can't do my work at night? If this is all about being available for the gathering, why can't I work at night? So really it should be from night, you can't work. Reb Zeira says, no, you can work at night. This is what I understand from Yirmi Bar Abba's teaching. It says it's like an atzeret, that's true, but it says it's like an atzeret because the elders are gathering. That means it has to be connected to the gathering. Just as the elders gather during the day, so to the fasting, when it comes to prohibition on work, is during the day. Now, if you're going to say it's all about when everyone's getting together, when do you usually set a gathering for? If you want most people to be available, let's say they got the day off, what kind of time of day would you schedule a gathering if you wanted everybody to be there? Midday. Why midday? Ain't no reason. Well, people wake up different times. Some people are not morning people. It takes people to get out of bed. You say, yeah, do it in midday. So the Gemara says, v'eim mitara. So maybe from midday you should say this. That's when you should do the gathering, and that's when you shouldn't work. Am Rishish Bar Rav Idi. Rishish Bar Rav Idi says, Masai Leila Rav Huna. Well, let's support Rav Huna here, that actually it does start during the morning. Da'ama Mitzafra Kinufya, which is that you should start gathering in the morning. And now we're going to have a setup for how these fast days should look. And this comes to the point where we're trying to figure out, what is a fast about? Is this an expression of grief? Is this about introspection? I'm meant to be working on myself. Is this a form of prayer? And again, lahavdil, the metaphor is, if my personal relationship is in trouble, what am I doing to mend it? Do I have to go into isolation to kind of reflect on where I went wrong? Do I start sending letters? Am I appealing for help? What should I be doing, and what order? So the Gemara says, Hechi Avdi, what should I do on this day? Amr Bai Abaya says, Mitzafra ad palda de yoma, from the morning, from dawn until midday, ma'aninan b'mili demata. We reflect on local matters. Meaning, if no rain has come, and we've had those three fasts of the elite and the three fasts of the public, nothing's happened, we set three fast days. And what do we do on those fast days? We can't eat, we can't wear shoes, we can't... But in addition to all of that, we have the whole day blocked off for public attention. And the first thing we do is we spend the first 6 hours of the day discussing where we've gone wrong. Everybody would gather in a room and say, okay, this is confession time. What do we need to do better as a community? What have we done wrong with the community? What decisions have we made? What tone have we used? What has anybody done? And this is basically a very strange moment. What we don't usually do. I mean, the closest we come to this is Yom Kippur, when we all sit there or stand there and we're saying, Al-Khay, but it's quite formalized what we say. But this would be a very idiosyncratic, personalized, let's stand up and say, what are we doing wrong? Which also, again, metaphorically, makes sense in a relationship. The first thing you're going to do is, okay, let's figure out where maybe we've gone wrong. Before I start appealing, I have to figure out where we can do better. Mekan va'elach, for midday and on, revia deyoma, for a quarter of the day. So there are three sections. The first half is reflection. The second part, the third quarter, karinan besifra va'aftarta. This is when we do the laning. So this is nap time during the day. This is when we start doing the laning. So we've now thought about where have we gone wrong. And then we fill, now that we've been depressed by everything we've done wrong, we remind ourselves of the ideal. How ought we to be? So we read a pertinent part of the prophets and a pertinent part of the Torah that reminds us of what we're meant to be doing. And from that moment on, for the last quarter of the day, Ba'inan Rachmei, we pray to God. That's the verse. From Nehemiah, talking about fasts that were instituted in the time of Ezra. And that's a pretty regimented day. This is not just, take your shoes off, don't eat, and have a normal day. This is a full blocked out crisis, where the first half of the day is, let's go through what we've done wrong. We do this three times. And then we have a quarter of the day dedicated to laning, which is presumably meant to be more than just everyone sits around and kind of wonders, you know, this is taking a while, let's keep moving. But this is, let's think about what God is asking of us. And then we say, okay, God, we've done reflection, we've heard your message, now come back. Over the page. Not over the page. Yes, onto Yud... Oh, gosh. Onto Yud Gimel. Top of the page. Epoch Anna. So the Gemara says, maybe I should invert it. Maybe you should do the laning first and the davening first, and then you should reflect. You know, if you're really desperate, this relationship with God is on a precipice, so reach out. Don't walk away. Otherwise, it sounds like you're disinterested. It looks like you're being self-indulgent. I'm going to think about what's good for me, and then I'll pray to God. Maybe you should reverse it. Lo sal gadatach, don't do that. Dichtiv, we have a verse that suggests that is the proper order. Ve'ilayasfu. This is a pasuk from Ezra talking about those same fasts. That says, to me will gather kol chared b'divrei Elokei Yisrael, all who are concerned about the words of the Lord of Israel, al ma'ala gola, on the challenges of exile. And after that k'tiv, it says, v'mincha ta'arev, and toward the evening, kamti mita'anati, I'll come up from my past, v'ersha kapel Hashem, and I'll open my hands to God. So it's indicated the last thing you do is pray. So kind of it's set up scripturally. The first thing you do when a relationship is in trouble with God theologically is you reflect, you figure out how you can do better, and then you pray to God. Full stop, new discussion. That all came from the discussion of working. Why can't I work? And essentially, it's not the absence of work, it's the presence of gathering, and you need to clear your schedule. So it's true, it may be a relief not to work, but don't think you're off the hook, say, oh, I don't have to work, I get the day off. You get the day off, but you've got a full day. So now we're on to a discussion of washing, because there was an ambiguity around work. We're not going to have any questions about taking shoes off. That seems pretty straightforward. That's uncomfortable. That's to cause discomfort. But washing, if I don't wash, it's true I don't get the pleasure of a warm shower, but I also become dirty. I can't really do my communal work as much as I could. I'm not going to be able to gather very easily with other people to pray. I'm going to feel like we all are going to feel uncomfortable. I'm Rav Chisda. And Rav Chisda is going to be one of the main figures in this discussion who will come up again and again. And now he's going to make a fundamental distinction between different kinds of prohibition when it comes to washing. Kol she mishum avel, anything that is about grief, could go on Tisha B'Av, avel, like on Tisha B'Av, or if you're in avelut when there's a prohibition to wash. Asur ben b'chamin ben b'tzonen. One is prohibited to wash whether the water is hot or cold. So what does it sound like? If you're prohibited to wash even in cold water, Why aren't you allowed to wash? It can't be out of joy. Because if it was just about joy, to have a cold shower, that's not enjoyable. What are we trying to avoid if you're in a state of grief?
Looking
good. So it could either be aesthetic, that, you know, it's not a pleasure, but I'll look good.
Or
I'll be comfortable, hygiene. And we're saying, you know, in a state of mourning, this really is about being unclean and leading to discomfort. But if it's just about pleasure, where we want people to focus their attentions on mending the relationship rather than getting distracted by enjoyment, like a public fast, you can wash in cold, but not in hot. Now, so there are two statements Rav Chisda has made. One is, if you're in grief, no hot or cold. If this is about a public commitment, you can use cold, but you can't have hot water. And now we're going to test both those assumptions. Most of the time we're going to spend dealing with, in grief, are you really telling me you can't use cold water? You really can't just clean yourself when you're in a state of grief? We'll have that most of the time. But first we react. This is the fifth green line. Rav Idi Bar Arvin, and Rav Idi is going to be an important name because his son's going to defend him in a moment. Rav Idi Bar Arvin says, Af ani nami tanina. And the truth is, this view of Chisda is obvious from the Mishnah that we just read, that you can't use cold, you can use cold water on a fast day. Because it says, v'nolin et amarchetza, you lock up the bathhouses. What's available in the bathhouses? Hot water. Where would you, if you wanted to have a cold bath in the old world, where would you go? Yeah, you go to the river. So we say we close the bathhouses, shows that you can't have a hot bath, but it sounds like you can still do cold baths. So it shows in the Mishnah you can do cold water on a fast day. So the Gemara responds, Abaya says, V'ibud sonen asa, hold on, you're telling me, so where's the cold water we said in the river? So if they wanted to say no cold baths, what would the Gemara suggest one should do? Lock up the river? You can't lock up the river. What are you talking about? Abaya says, Ibad sonen asa, sochrin etanara, mibay lenemis. Are you telling me the Gemara would say we lock up the rivers? And yeah, I could see people putting like fencing around a river or something. He said, what are you talking about? That's not a good implication. So the response is, no, that's not my implication. I'm Shish Breder of Idi, the son of Rav Idi, says, Abba hachi kashale. This is what my father was responding to in the text. Michti, let's see. Tanan asa brachitz. It says, you cannot wash. That's all it needs to say. Why do you need to tell me you lock up the bathhouses? You don't lock up the shoe stores. You don't go and confiscate people's shoes. You've told them they don't wear shoes, so tell them not to wash. That sounds broad. So the fact that it adds, and we lock up the bathhouses, is to indicate only hot water. So problem, full stop. That's the end of the discussion about Tanit Sibur. Now we're going to talk about washing in grief. Is it true, Rav Chisda's view, that you cannot use cold water in a state of grief? And for those of you who have unfortunately been through Shiva, there will be questions around, am I allowed to have a shower? Does it have to be cold? Can I have a warm shower? All sorts of questions. And I'll note that a lot of what we'll discuss is not bottom line normative today. So if you do have questions, you should feel free to follow up on them. Lema Masayle. So let's support the view of Rav Chisda that you cannot use even cold water on a fast day. And we're going to have a lot of texts that imply his view, and it's going to take a little bit of intellectual gymnastics to get at the implication. We're going to have three texts to try to support him. Number one, Kol Chayave Tevilot. Anybody who has to go to mikveh to immerse, Tovlin Kedarkan Ben Betishba Ben Yom Kippur. The suggestion of this teaching, this brighter, is if you need to go to the mikveh, you can go to the mikveh on Yom Kippur and on Tishbav. B'mai, so what are we talking? What kind of mikveh are we talking about? Ilema b'chamin. If we're talking about people who need to go to mikveh can go in the water, that implies that who can't go into water? Anybody else? So it sounds like there is an exception made for people who need to go to mikveh. And nobody else can go in. So if we're talking about hot mikvehs, the Gemara now says, what are you talking about? There are no hot mikvehs. You can't have a hot mikveh. How do you heat up water? The only way to heat up water is to take it out and put it on top of a fire. Obviously, that's not true anymore, but it used to be that was the only way to heat up water, and that makes the water what's called she'uvim, drawn by people. The only way for a kosher mikveh is if the rain collected naturally, or if it's a natural body of water. You can't heat that up. So it must be saying, anybody who needs to go to mikveh can immerse in cold water, which implies what? Nobody else can go in cold water. So it sounds like cold water is prohibited if you're in a state of avelut. That's the implication here. But so then it must be talking about cold water. The chayvei tefilot in, and it suggests people who need to immerse can, in a shachrin alo, but nobody else. So this proves Rav Chisda's point. If you're in avelut, you cannot go, and this is indicated by Tishbav, you can't even bathe in cold water. Now, is it true that you can't have any hot mikvahs if you don't heat up the water on top of a fire? Right, the classic example. Go on. Where can you have it? How else would you? Yeah, the classic example that Gemara is going to give is Chamei Tvera, which are the natural hot springs of Tiberias. I've never been there. I don't know if they are currently available for the public, but they're natural hot water, which would be the equivalent of our mikvahs today. So he says, no, it's talking very specifically about Chamei Tvera, where we're saying if you are needing a immersion, you can go in the hot water, but nobody else can. But maybe everybody can go in cold water. So maybe this doesn't support Rav Chisda's view. Then the Gemara said, well, hold on a minute. The end of that Mishnah won't square with that, because the end of the Mishnah says, in the name of Rav Chanin Skana Kohanim, he said, you know, it makes sense. At the end of the Mishnah says, if you can't go once to Tevila for one day to remember the Mikdash, meaning on Tisha B'Av, he's disagreeing with the first view that says people who need to immerse can go even on Tisha B'Av. Rav Chanin Skana Kohanim says, let them wait a day. You don't have to go one that day. You can go on a different day. It's worthy. If the whole case of the first example was a person in need of immersion can go in hot water, but nobody else can. But of course, everybody can go in cold water. So the second view that says, no, they should skip it for one day. Why would you need to skip it? Just go in the cold water. It doesn't square logically. The response is, Amar Papa, but Arta de lo Shchich Sone. No, it's talking about a case where you don't have cold water. So it's very, very narrow, the focus of that Mishnah. So textually, this is a workable solution. Contextually, it's very hard to suggest. All we're trying to do is say, is there a possibility this doesn't prove Rav Chisda's point? And the answer is yes. It's a small possibility that this is only talking about the springs of Tiberias where there's no cold water available. And we're saying people who need to immerse can, but nobody else can. But if there was cold water, of course, everybody could jump in. It's a very specific, very narrow way of reading this, but it's enough to show that it doesn't prove its point. Tashma, let's find another proof. When we say that it's prohibited to do work, this is a long brighter, the end of which is going to try to prove that Rav Chisda is correct, that in mourning you cannot even bathe in cold water. When you say you can't do work, you can't do it during the day, but at night you can. When you say you can't wear shoes, we say that's only in the city, but when you're walking along, you can wear shoes. Meaning you don't have to walk between one city and the next in without shoes on. You don't have to drive, from one place to the other without shoes on. That's, for example, Yom Kippur on Tisha B'Av, where we sit low in the morning. There's like one exception, which is if you're sitting in the car. Can you imagine, putting the seat all the way back and sitting on the floor and kind of trying to move along? I'm being very frum. Yes, but you're also going to hurt someone, so you can sit. And that's clearly not like enjoyment. You're just trying to get from place to place. This actually came up when I was in Israel for Tisha B'Av. It must have been a very long time ago, 5, 6, I don't know how many years ago. Sometimes I'm sure this happens to all of us. You're very busy, you're running around, you get your shoes on, you go to shul, and then you're like, oh gosh, I'm wearing leather shoes, and it's Tisha B'Av. Maybe it only happens to me. And I'm like, okay, I take them off. So I took them off in shul, and we didn't drive there. I was staying at Miriam's uncle in Israel, and it was a walk back home, and these were like Israeli streets. I mean, not all Israeli streets, the streets of this yeshuv. They were like stones and rocks, and the paving wasn't brilliant. So I'm going to walk home in my socks. And the suggestion of the rabbi of the town says, no, you can wear them when you're walking between places. Turns out that's not strictly the way we view halacha. And he told me that about an hour later. But I'm very glad that I had the hour window where he said, wear shoes to get home. And then afterwards he said, you know what, maybe you shouldn't have done that. And I said, yeah, I didn't think I should either. But, shame. But this is a suggestion here, because between cities, it's not like walking home from shul. This is like you're going on a trek from place to place. You can wear shoes. Ha-ketzad, in what way? Yotzvele derech noel. When you go out, you put the shoes on. Nichnas le'ir chalech. When you're in the city, you take them off. And this is the important bit for us. So when they say you can't wash on a fast, de'ila amru ela kol gufo. That just means you can't wash your whole body. Av apanav yadav raglav matav. You can wash your face, hands, and feet. Now, that is another way to distinguish between pleasurable washing and hygienic washing. If it's about pleasure, I'm not going to talk about, just putting water on my face and washing my hands. Nobody, after they've been to the bathroom, washes hands and says, oh, what a joy, what a pleasure. Well, maybe you do if you've got nice hot water and it's a cold day. But, you want to get in a hot bath or you want to get in a hot shower. So that's the other distinction. Cold is not about pleasure. And if it's just your hands, face, and feet, we don't often wash our feet in public. But that's seen as less significant in terms of pleasure. That's just about hygiene. So you can do that. And now this is the key line. V'chein ata motze b'menuda uva avel. And this is also true about someone who's been, what's a menuda? Anyone know that?
Excommunicated.
Yes, someone who's been excommunicated, which is linguistically connected to the word nida, meaning to be kind of at the side, which we'd talk about if we were doing Masechet Nida. Uva avel and someone who's in mourning. So it now sounds like you've said, someone who's in mourning can wash their hands, face, and feet. Now, if you're telling me they can't do hot or cold, we're going to have to figure out what this means, why they're allowed to do hands, face, and feet. My love akulhu. So the Gemara says, that last addendum, saying this is true of people who are in mourning and excommunicated, presumably that's referring back to the whole Mishnah, that when we're talking about work, they can't do it during the day, but they can do it at night, that they can wear shoes when they're in between cities, that they can wash their hands, face, and feet. Presumably it's saying, and all the above applies to someone who's in mourning. And if that's true, for my askinan, what are we dealing with? Elema b'chamin, if we're talking about hot water, panav yada v'raglav misharu, who on earth would allow someone in mourning to wash their hands, face, and feet with hot water? You can't allow that. Harm of sheshet, sheshet it made clear, and this is a refrain that will appear again and again, Aval also lahoshit etzba ubachamin. As someone who's in mourning cannot even put their finger in hot water. They can't. It's seen as a source of pleasure, as I mentioned before, that, you know, when I'm bathing my kids, it is actually quite nice to put my hands in the hot, warm water. And the suggestion is if you're in a state of grief, you can't even put your finger in hot water. That's seen as a form of enjoyment of one sort or another. So it can't be talking about that. Elalav but sonen. It must be talking about sonen and cold water, which means that it's true for Rav Chisda, that someone in mourning cannot wash in cold water apart from hands, face, and feet, which is seen as kind of a broad, like this has got nothing to do with pleasure. This is literally just I'm cleaning my hands to get germs off or dirt off. But otherwise, cold water is out, even cold water is out for that person in mourning. So this sounds like it proves Rav Chisda's case. Lo, la'olam b'chamin. Really, it's talking about hot water. And again, we're going to have a very hard to maintain textual reading, which is the kakashalach, and that bit which troubled you, v'chein ata motze b'menuda uva avel, that last clause, asharakai, only refers to the rest of the Mishnah. When we said working has to be can be done at night, but not during the day. Shoes can be worn on the street, but not in the cities. And then it says, and washing could be hands, face, and feet. We say, oh, that last bit doesn't apply when we said, and all the above apply to those in mourning. We say, oh, no, that last bit doesn't. Just talking about the rest. Is it possible to read it that way? Yes. And that's enough to say this is not a proof for Rav Chisda. Tashma, last attempt to prove this point. Dark blue. I'm sorry, this is the hardest color to read. Dam Rav Abba HaKohen Mishum B'Yosi HaKohen. We now have a case of Rav Abba by Rav Yosi HaKohen, who says, Ma said there was a episode. Umeitu bano shal Rav Yosi ben Rav Chanina, when the son of Rav Yosi ben Chanina passed away, v'rachatz b'tzonen kol shiva, and he had cold baths all week long. So it sounds like the episode of this sage proves Rav Chisda's wrong, that someone who's an aveilut can't even bathe in cold water because he did it all 7 weeks. No, hatam kishitakfuhu ala aveila v'alav. This was a very specific case when grief gripped him. Anyone in this case, when grief gripped him, what that means? It sounds like on the face of it, it means like, oh, he was in a real, personally, he was really wrought by the grief, and hygiene shouldn't really help there. This is a case where, as he was about to end one Avelut, another Avelut started. So he lost his son, and then as Shiva or Shloshim was coming to an end, he lost another close relative, and it started again. And at this point we say, okay, it's been 30 days, you can wash in cold water. So there are certain carved out exceptions in a case where an Avelut has gone on too long, where this is not, you can now enjoy yourself, but now hygiene becomes possible. D'tanya, how do I know? It was taught, if somebody has Avelut, strike them again and again, one after the other. If their hair gets too heavy, they can cut it with ta'ar. Ta'ar is a razor, which Tosfot points out means not that you can kind of sit and have a haircut, but it means if it's too heavy, you can just loosely kind of cut pieces off so it's not too long or heavy. You can wash your clothing in water. Rav Chisda adds, batar with a razor, v'loba misparayim, not with scissors, v'mayim with water, loba netiv, loba chol, not with dirt or sand. And it's odd to suggest you can't wash your clothes with dirt, but that was one way to get grime out, was you would take kind of soil or stones and you'd rub it. And even though today we would kind of clean things to get that off, they use that to clean things. Full stop, we have now conclusively said we don't have a Mishnaic text to prove Rav Chisda's view. that in Avelut, you can't even use cold water. We had three attempts, ways around it. It seems like the most plausible reading, but nothing conclusive. So now we've got the view of Rava, who will take us over to the next half daf, and then we'll wrap for today. Amar Rava. Rava said, Avel mutar lerchotz besonin kol shiva. The very opposite view of Rav Chisda, where we can't prove Rav Chisda's point. So let's look at Rava. Rava says someone in mourning is permitted to wash themselves all 7 days in cold water. Midi dahava abisra v'chamra, just like meat and wine. Somebody who's in shiva, are they allowed to eat meat? Yes. Are they allowed to drink wine?
No.
Close?
Yes.
So wine, actually, in Avelut, you can drink. Aninut, you can't have wine. So in between somebody passing away and the funeral, that's a stage where you can't have meat or wine. But once Avelut begins, you can have wine. It's not common that people do. But it used to actually be part of Shiva. There would be wine. You would have something to drink. And there are remarks made in the Gemara, Ein yai nivra ela la Avelut. That wine was created for the sake of Avelut. And again, this is odd. Can you imagine? No rain has come. Everything's falling apart. And I sit down and I, you know, have a swig of wine. Think, well, you're relaxing now? What are you doing? Everything's in trouble. But Avelut is fundamentally a different expression of grief. There's nothing I can do. I have lost somebody. I can't bring them back. There's nothing I can address here. So I'm going to have wine. Because what does wine do for me? It dulls the senses. It lowers my anxiety. And at a time when you're in kind of a desperate state, anxiety is not a healthy state to be in generally, but if that motivates me to do something to address a situation, harness it. But if I'm in a position where there's nothing I can do, anxiety isn't helpful, and you can have wine. So he's saying, so you should be able to wash in cold water as well. This is, you can be clean, because that's also going to lower your anxiety. So now we're going to see if we can prove Rava's point. Mate Faye, but first we have a question. And we're going to try to see maybe if he's wrong. Ein habogeret rasha, this is open to Yud Gimel Amud Bet, top line. Ein habogeret rasha lenavelet atzma b'mei evel aviha. If a bogeret, what is a bogeret? 12.5-year-old girl, who is now in the rabbinic times eligible for marriage. She is rasha lenavel ein habogeret. She is not permitted. Lenavel et atzma. What is lenavel? Lenavel is to... I'm trying to think of a word that is accurate. She is not permitted to make herself unseemly. Is that too many double negatives? She should make herself appear attractive during Avelot, because she's eligible now at this age. Hanara rasha. So this sounds like Anara is permitted to make herself not unseemly. I don't know why it's expressed this way. Somebody who is eligible for marriage is allowed to make themselves attractive. Somebody who is not is not. So hold on a minute. Now the Gemara says, Uvamai. So what are we talking about? My love, Barachitza. Presumably we're talking about cleaning oneself. If you're eligible for marriage and you're going on dates, you should have a shower. If you're not, you should not. That's what it sounds like. Uvamai, ilay mebachamin. If we're talking about a hot shower, ein abogeret rasha, we're saying that a bogeret is not allowed to not have that, meaning she has to have a hot shower. Bahamar of Chista, it can't be that's true, because if Chista says, aval asala shespa bachamin, it can't be talking about hot water. If Chista says, nobody can do hot water. So it sounds like a very narrow exception for a woman who is eligible for marriage, who can bathe herself. Even in that case, Elalav Batsonin is only talking about cold water, implying that nobody else can have cold water showers. So Rava, on the bottom of the last page, who said that in an Avelut, everyone can have a cold shower, doesn't sound like it. It sounds like only a Bogeret can have a cold shower because she's eligible for marriage and we want to make sure that she can. We're not going to disrupt her life. Lo, the Gemara concludes, no, this whole discussion has got none to do with showering. So you can't prove anything one way or other. All this is talking about Akichul Upirchas, which is talking about makeup and hair product, which I learned a lot about yesterday, incidentally, that she is allowed, if she's eligible for marriage, to do things to her hair, but cleaning we're not even talking about in terms of showering. So now that we've tried to say that we have something against Rava. Lema Masayle, maybe we'll have something to prove Rava's point is correct. We've had this story before. We've got the case where he would rachatz person and kol shiva. He would have a shower in cold water every day of shiva. Sounds like right on point with Rava, who said people in Avelot can have cold showers. No, that's talking about when he's had one successive Avelut. So you can't use that to prove the point either. The contingency of that text means that it can't be used as proof one way or other. It's an episode. And now that it's been rendered halakhically futile, because you can't prove one way or other, it's really designed to get us into a state of where he was, having gone through one Avelut after the other. D'tanya, it was okay, we did that over the page, that there are certain exceptions made if someone is in the grip of successive mornings. Now, there are some who say, that's not what Rava said. Rava didn't say someone can shower in cold water the whole of Avelot. He said the opposite, in fact, the same as Rav Chista. Amar Rava, Avel Asur Betzon in Kol Shiva. That a person cannot have cold water all the way through Shiva. And now we're going to see if we can prove that point, which is to try and prove of Chista's view again. And Rava continues by saying, "My shnam b'basa b'yayin, how is showering different from meat and wine?" Someone in Avelut can sit there and have a steak and can sit there and have a whole swig of Merlot, be saying you can't have a cold shower. Why not? Hatam la papuche pachde, because when you have meat and when you have wine, that's lowering your anxiety. Having a cold shower has got nothing to do with anxiety, that's to do with hygiene. So there's a clear distinction. So again, we're trying to navigate, what are we trying to do as per Sheryl Sandberg? Are we trying to build resilience? Are we trying to find joy? And to some degree, in Avelot, it sounds like you are trying to find joy. You're trying to give people the option to have wine or meat to lower their anxiety and find the ability to not fall into the grip of despair. Having a cold shower, that's not going to bring you out of despair. As Dror pointed out, sometimes that can be painful to have a cold shower. I'd rather be unclean than have a cold shower. So, Lema Masayle, now maybe we can prove his point where he says you cannot have a cold shower in Avelut, and we're going to try to use the same source above that didn't work then to work now. Eina bogeret rasha l'navel atzma. A bogeret has to have a shower. Hanara rasha, but a nara, meaning younger than 12 and a half, cannot have a shower. B'mai, ilema b'chamin, if we're talking about hot water, eina bogeret rasha, it can't be that we're saying that somebody who is a Bulgarian can have a hot shower. No one can. So it must be talking about sonen, which sounds like only a Bulgarian can have a cold shower, nobody else can. Lo, akil pichas, no, that it's all incidental, not related. It's talking about makeup. And on that note, we have a parenthetical remark from Rav Chista. Am Rav Chista, zot omeret. This is what it said. Avel asub tichboset kol shiva. A person in mourning can't launder their clothes for the entire 7 days. Full stop. Now we have the gray bottom line halachic summary of what we've just covered since the Mishnah, talking about the ambiguities of washing. What kind of washing? If it's just my hand, face, and feet? What if it's cold? What if it's hot? All sorts of questions. Hilchata, it was taught as follows as the halacha. Avel aso lechotz kol gufo. A person in mourning cannot wash their whole body, meaning, we'll get to hands and feet in a minute, but when it comes to the whole body, one cannot wash ben b'chamin, ben b'tzon and kol shiva. One cannot wash in hot or cold water the entirety of shiva. Again, in normative terms today, we are considered, because society has shifted, how often did they bathe in the 1300s? To give a rough number on it, not very often. Depending what class you were in, what class did Jews tend to be in? Yeah, whatever is at the bottom, that tended to be the class that Jews were in, you didn't bathe very often. So now we bathe quite often. So there's obviously a shift in the way that we live our lives, what's considered not for pleasure. So there are different rules, but this is the bottom line. Strictly speaking, cotton hold water, hot and cold water out. In Avelut, for the whole body. When it comes just to hand, face, and feet, chamin also, you can't use hot water, but cold water you can. Avel lasuch, and in aval lasuch, but in terms of anointing, afilu kol shu asur is prohibited in any amount. But if it's just to remove like grime or sweat, it's permitted. Meaning if you're putting on antiperspirant as opposed to cologne, which I think is not about perspirant but about smelling nice, that would be a distinction, full stop. And what we'll come to next time in Saluta Danita, now that we've discussed the ambiguities around what is bathing about and what is not working about, we're going to come to prayer. And what is prayer about? Is prayer about changing minds or is it about changing me? And we'll come over the course of the next daf which we may not finish the end of the next stuff next time, but that would lead us to the end of the perek. But in the meantime,